welcome, welcome. Hello, my name is Rebecca, and I am your host for Unchurched. Dun, dun, dun. It is the podcast where we examine church culture. Those are the things and the ideas and the beliefs and the corresponding actions, or the things that they do, and or we do, and then we compare it to the Bible. I know, I'm so dramatic today. I don't know why. It may be a little bit of excess coffee. Who knows? Anyway, but that's what we do on Unchurched. Usually what we do, and we have done our pattern, our template, the thing that we normally do is what we do is we take an idea and we look at it from the perspective of kind of like a general perspective and then examine that. And we look at it and say, okay, well, here's what the church says, or here's what a majority of churches say, or even like where a lot of churches differ. And then we examine it and compare it to what the Bible says. And then we go on from there. And this episode, now a few weeks ago, I had Israel and the anti-cage Calvinist on my show from Not the Bee. And so I've also got this gal that I've interviewed from Not the Bee. Her name is, she goes by Rebecca C. And she, really fascinating, interesting person. And I was excited to talk to her, and I had a good conversation with her about cancel culture and her perspective, and it went really, really well. And so I'm going to share that with you here in just a minute, because I do believe that the way that cancel culture views, well, I will let her explain it, but how it relates to the gospel is fascinating, and her perspective. So we will get into that right now. All right. Today we're talking with Rebecca C. She is a PhD student.
Yes, at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, where it is eternally summer, which is new to me and very pleasant. So I am, it's a 5 to 6 year program. So I'll have a PhD and a master's degree at the end of it. I am at the end of my second year, so I'm just about to finish up the master's requirements. I'll be done taking my own courses after this year. And then I teach undergrad courses, and I'll work on some bigger projects, ultimately culminating in a dissertation.
Awesome. Do you know what your dissertation is already going to be about?
No, not so much. Probably something in metaethics. Applied ethics is things like this particular thing is wrong, or this particular thing is morally permissible. If you start there and ask why, you get normative ethics. If you start normative ethics and ask why again, you get metaethics. So that's kind of where I think my wheelhouse will end up being.
Awesome. Where did you grow up?
I grew up near Seattle, where it is not eternally summer. My parents moved up there just after they graduated college. My dad's a software developer, so he worked for Microsoft. And then I went out to Michigan for 4 years to go to Hillsdale College for undergrad. And then I ended up in LA. So lots of different weather.
All right. So before we get into what I'd like to talk to you about, I'd like to get to know you a little bit better, have our listeners get to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us your salvation story, how you came to Christ, your journey to that, I guess? How did you get saved?
Yeah. My parents are both Christians. I grew up in a Christian home. I grew up in the church. I have a vague memory of probably when I was 3 or 4, sitting on my bed with my dad and asking him to pray with me and accept Christ as my savior. When I was 7, I asked to be baptized. I remember talking with my children's pastor, explaining, this is what I think it means. This is why I want to do it. So I was baptized at 7. And then I think my character continued to be molded and grow. I remember I went to a Christian school as well, and that was really helpful in that regard. I think my conscience got a lot stronger. I remember one particular time in fourth grade. And honestly, I credit it to my fourth grade teacher in large part, but I don't really remember a specific lesson. I think I really admired her, and I think she taught theology at a fourth grade level really well, and how to think about sin and how to, she talked a lot about selflessness. But I remember just a stark contrast. In third grade, I intentionally cheated on a spelling test because I knew I could get away with it. One of the challenge words I knew I'd misspelled. So I went out to my cubby and checked the list and then came back in and said, oh, I just remembered how to spell it. Can I have my test back and fix it? And then in fourth grade, I was taking a geography test, and I glanced behind me at the globe. I didn't get any information from it. I turned back immediately, but I told my teacher about it and said, if you don't want to count that answer, I get it. So I changed from blatantly, brazenly cheating to caring a lot about not cheating in 1 year. So that's one way my character grew. In middle school, I started volunteering as a became my summer job as a traveling children's musical theater band troupe thingy that goes up and down the West Coast and puts on vacation Bible schools at various churches and camps. So I did a lot of, I think I grew a lot closer to God through that, partly because of the work itself and partly because it was a big challenge in a lot of ways, interpersonally in part. I think I developed a much stronger habit of reading my Bible daily at that point, and also just gained a lot of theological insight through what we were teaching and also through the work and through praying for and with kids. So that continued to be a source of growth. One particular thing that I've clung to as I've grown and also through some medical difficulties has been, I think it's 2 Corinthians 12. About Paul's thorn, that the reason God gives us weaknesses and trials is to display his strength, and actually to make us stronger, because me relying on my own wimpy absent strength is far weaker than when my strength is completely taken away and I'm just dependent on God's. So that's something that I've continued to grow in awareness of and depth of understanding of over a period of a lot of years.
Well, that's really that cool. So I've noticed that on Not to Be that you. Here's one thing that I have really noticed about you is that you have a deep love for C.S. Lewis writings, especially the Chronicles of Narnia. And you seem to quote them all the time.
Yes, I do.
So what drew you to the Chronicles of Narnia and what makes them special for you?
Yeah. The Chronicles of Narnia have been my favorite books since literally before I could read. My parents read them aloud to me. We were assigned to write a poem in first grade about kind of anything. And I think I wrote about Marsh Wiggles. I've been very familiar with and very much in love with the Chronicles of Narnia for a very long time. I think part of what I like about them is the respect that C.S. Lewis has for children. I felt myself to be very grown up from the moment I left the womb, possibly earlier. I just don't remember. And so that was one thing that I loved about them. They treated children like people instead of treating children like children. And also treated the reader with some respect. There are heavy concepts in that book. There's advanced vocabulary in those books and you just kind of pick it up. And then I love the story. I think it, without being preachy or trying to get across the theological message at the expense of story, just the way that it tells a story, I think all good stories do this. It reflects God's glory and beauty and some truths about him, just not by being a fable kind of disguised as an interesting story, but by being a good story. That probably doesn't make a lot of sense. But I love his writing. I love how clear it is. I love his theology and his reasoning. There's nobody whose writings have had more influence on the style or substance of what I write. I could cite at least one C.S. Lewis book in pretty much everything I write if I wanted to.
Of that, I have no doubt. So being an avid reader and a love for C.S. Lewis, do you also, and a philosopher, do you also write, or do you spend time writing stories, that sort of thing?
Right now, my writing time is pretty swamped with papers. I played around with some fiction in high school and lower grades. I haven't done a lot with that since outside of schoolwork. But I think I'm too much of a perfectionist to write fiction. I want the first draft to be great, and I can't just spill thoughts on a paper. But yeah, so mostly writing philosophy right now.
So between... you mentioned something earlier about having been in theater and in a traveling troupe, Christian theater, and then also having love. And even though you're not writing now, do you feel that art in general, and this is something that I'm going to ask about, because being an artist, I love it, and I feel very closely connected to this topic, and so I can't help but ask you this. Do you feel that Christians have a responsibility to participate in making and making art?
I wouldn't say every Christian has kind of a moral obligation to make art in some form. I do think it's really valuable. I actually wrote an interdisciplinary undergrad thesis on the kind of connection between the arts and philosophy. I think philosophy and theology can kind of be really precise about explaining the skeletal structure of reality. But the arts, poetry, music, theater, all kinds of things are actually more like the real thing. There's one thing that supports this, I think, is that there's a ton of poetry in the Bible. You can kind of explain discursively, explain philosophically, explain theologically the structure of something, and that gives you a kind of knowledge of it. But I think if that's all you do, you're missing a piece of it. On one simple level, I played Linda Loman in Death of a Salesman, and I think I think I know more about marriage, weirdly, by having played Linda Loman than I would if I didn't. And furthermore, I think I know things about marriage that I could never learn by reading a philosophical or theological or psychological treatise on it. There are kinds of information that you can get discursively, and then there are kinds of information that you get by experience the thing. And I think poetry and music and theater show us more of this other side. It's like, yeah, it's the difference between a labeled skeletal structure of something and seeing it in a mirror. They both reflect the truth. They both show you things about reality. They can both show you things about God, but they're very different things. So I think those two things complement each other really well. And it's a good reminder to my analytic philosophical brain that understanding the structure of things is not the be all end all. You have to see and experience them. And that comes with a different kind of understanding.
Yeah. Kind of like fleshing it out. No, kind of a way.
Yeah.
So what I asked you here is that there was a post on Not the Bee that somebody made about cancel culture, and you had a response that I thought was just was great, and I really want to talk to you about your view on cancel culture and how that relates to us as Christians.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, to be clear, I think cancel culture gets a lot of things very wrong. I think its application of the really specific intuition that I agree with is wrong. And I think there are a lot of things that people get canceled for that aren't actually moral wrongs and don't deserve canceling. But I do think that cancel culture is grounded in part in an intuition that when you've done something wrong, it kind of doesn't matter how long it's been. It doesn't matter what other good things you've done. It doesn't matter how, quote unquote, minor the wrong thing was. You really can't do anything to make up for it. If you use the N-word in a way that's morally wrong and hurts people when you're 14, and then you grow up, you become a world famous and super compassionate doctor, and you cure cancer, none of that does anything to undo the moral wrong that you did or the harm that you caused when you were 14. And yeah, I think cancel culture in part comes out of grappling with that reality. If we take wrong and harmful things as the really serious and kind of unfixable on a human level things that they are, how can we offer people reconciliation? I think that's a legitimate question. And I think cancel culture is right that every sin, no matter how minor or how long ago, really is that serious. And then I think the reason we can say no to cancel culture, the reason we can say we don't have to remove people from society's good graces, the reality is everybody deserves to be canceled, not just the people who have made super public mistakes or who are public figures or who have unwisely kept their Facebook or Twitter history for the past 20 years when they said stupid things. I think, yeah, everybody deserves to be canceled. So that's one thing that cancel culture doesn't quite recognize. We're all in the same boat here. And then ultimately, I think the answer to the question, the answer to, I think, the right intuition and question that they have about how do we have reconciliation if we take this with consummate seriousness is the cross. The reason we can have reconciliation and make amends and kind of allow people back into society after they've done bad things, which we all have, is because no matter what we do, whether we're bitter or we forgive, whether we allow people back into kind of society's good graces or not, every sin will ultimately meet perfect justice, either in eternal damnation or in Christ's death on the cross. So God has declared forever that that sin matters. And the fact that that sin matters will be met with a consummate punishment, either in hell or on the cross. So we don't have to kind of carry the burden as a society of declaring and responding rightly to the fact that this matters. We have a justice system. We do reflect God's justice, but we can also reflect his grace. And because of the cross, we can forgive without mitigating the wrongness of the sin.
Boom. That was it right there. That, I believe, was the heart that you were trying to say, that that's exactly what you were getting at online and of the comment that I saw. And I was like, yes, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to her about this. So now what do we do with this information? Is that this is what, how do we mesh the two? How do we convey this to people who are entrenched in cancel culture? How do we bring this to an evangelistic point of view? How do we communicate people who are who have this worldview, who need to hear the gospel?
Yeah, I think to take it through the evangelistic route and give what I think is the ultimate answer to it, the theological answer, is going to be a long conversation. But I think the first thing to say is you're right. I actually think that's the first thing to say to a lot of people that I disagree with about a lot of things. I think it's really important to affirm what people who get a lot wrong actually get right. Partly because it's more persuasive. I think it tends to be more respectful to the person and kind. And it also keeps us from error. If errors come in pairs of opposites, and if you fight really hard against one opposite, you tend to end up in the other one. So it's important to cling to the truth instead of fighting against error. And part of that means affirming what a view that gets a lot wrong gets right. So I would start by saying, I think you're right. I think your intuition here is really good. If someone uses the N-word in a way that is morally wrong and hurts people, there's kind of no way back from that to start with. And then I'd probably take the conversation to But this is actually an even bigger problem than cancel culture recognizes, because we all do this. We haven't all used the N-word, particularly not on Twitter. But we all sin, or I guess I probably wouldn't use the word sin yet in that conversation, but we all do wrong things and we all hurt people and none of us can fix it. So we should kind of all be canceled. The best person who ever lived, the best person who's alive today should be canceled. And so how do we find a way back from that? And then I would kind of start talking around to the theological side of things and say, this is actually something that religions over the course of history have struggled with. How do we make things right? Because we all recognize that the world's messed up. We all recognize that people are messed up. How do we fix it? And I think the only religion that, the only group of people that answers this in a way that's consistent with your intuition that people can't fix it. No matter how many good things you do, you can't make up for the wrong and you can't undo the hurt that you've done. The only religion that is consistent with that intuition is actually Christianity. Because every other religion says, here's how people can make things right with God, or here's how people can fix the moral wrongs that they've done. And Christianity says, we can't. Here's how God did. And then, I mean, obviously there are a lot more theological conversations to have there, depending on the person's response, but that's how it starts.
Yeah, it's just, it seems like cancel culture is just firmly fixed on the fact and the idea that by canceling people and things that it's going to make everything better, that everything's just going to be better if we cancel it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I certainly don't think that's a real fix. I guess in part, it's a right response in a way, in that, or it's trying to do something right, and that it's trying to acknowledge the depth of the evil. But that doesn't fix the evil. So it fixes the fact that we don't take it seriously enough, that we don't take moral wrongs or hurting people seriously enough. But it can't undo the hurt or the wrong. It just says there's no way back. So it acknowledges the problem, but honestly, I don't think it's a solution.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for coming on the program. You really have a lot of wisdom. You had a lot of insight and a lot to share that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of here today in such a short amount of time. With your philosophy, with the things that you're doing is, I believe, really needed in our culture, is needed in our, you know, to help people see Christ, to all the things that you're doing with a love of for God, for His Word, for the gospel, for sharing, and for seeing other people come to Christ. What you're doing and where you are at is absolutely 100% needed and valuable. And don't stop doing what you're doing. Continue to share.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the dramatic music. End. Close. Yeah, thanks again to Rebecca C. for chatting with me. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed getting to know her better, and I loved her perspective about cancel culture and sin and how that is fantastic. Yeah, we do absolutely need to be canceled for all of our indiscretions, no matter how big or how small that we think they are. They're all the same in God's eyes. And the only one who can cancel our sin, of course, is Jesus Christ, which He has done for us through the cross. If you would like to be on this program, I asked her, but, if you're like, oh, well, man, I want to be on this program and, you'd like to have me poorly pick your brain and, rehash our conversation and chop it up, because that may or may not happen, on this show, then you can send me an email at talktome@unchurch.net and love to chat with you. that there's that. You can send me an email, complain, compliment, say, yeah, hey, where's my episodes? I know for a while I have not been posting episodes and I want to apologize. I got a little bit behind and things should be doing better now. Man, I forgot how much work interviews are to polish them up afterwards. Yeah, that's part of it. So the other part is it's also springtime and there's a lot to do out in the yard and just getting things ready for summer. So there's that as well that I've got going on. And then because the world is opening back up, things are getting busier again. So I've also had some opportunities with my music. And so it's not that I don't want to do this or I'm forgetting about this. It's just that there are things that are taking my attention away from this. And I plan to continue doing Unchurched. So that's where we're at. I need to sit down and I've got several ideas and several shows that need to be done and put out. And so if you stick with me, we'll be putting out more. We're going to be talking about forgiveness. We're going to be talking about mercy. We're going to be talking about grace in the next few weeks. Those are definites, because we've been talking a lot about sin and we've been talking a lot about that. And we're still talking on foundational episodes. This is episode 16. So, yeah. So after we've just gone through a series about sin and heart surgery and, what sin is and why we need to be canceled. So now we need to talk about, we're heading into forgiveness. So that's where we're headed. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. And we will be back next week with another show right here on Unchurched.